I don't know what's missing in my brain that lets me think those things are true, but I'm glad it's missing because it turns out they are true. And I think if there's anything that I leave people with, it's that, like, you can, like, without question, do way, way more than you think you can. You know, you may have spent your whole childhood on a pig farm in Missouri thinking you're an indoor kid. And hey, you might not be. Like, you might have some 100-milers in you. So I think that's always top of mind when I'm talking about this type of stuff, because I just really can't articulate how mind-blowing this would be to, like, 10-year-old Jeffrey. Like, I would give anything to go back and be like, hey, dude, get this. You are not going to believe this.
Hey, everybody. This is Nikki Tamburino, aka One Classy Mother Runner on Instagram. And you're listening to the Maybe Running Will Help podcast, the show that explores the why of running for people who love to run. Today, I'm inviting you to listen in to my conversation with Jeffrey James Binney. He's a motivational speaker, ultra-running athlete, actor, singer, and comedian. Jeffrey's award-winning film, Once Is Enough, chronicles his journey after losing his mom. Listen in as Jeff tells us about flipping the script on life by taking us through his experience as a theater kid living on a pig farm in Missouri to his new role as a badass ultra-runner. You're going to love this one, guys. So let's get started. Oh, and one more thing. Stay tuned after the episode for a few updates. Because this episode was recorded in July this past summer, I have some exciting news about Jeff and where he is now.
All right, I'm going to put on my, like, host hat for a second and do, like, my little intro. And so my voice might change a little bit. And then I'll get back to, like, normal and my regular voice.
like my straight voice. My husband thinks my straight voice is hilarious. Apparently, whenever I call camp shop or something, I have, like, a different, I guess, I turn into this Jeffrey. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
I understand.
Okay. All right. Here we go. All right, guys. I am so excited about our next guest. According to Google, Jeffrey James Binney is a motivational speaker, ultra-running athlete, actor, singer, and comedian. Jeffrey's award-winning film, Once Is Enough, chronicles his journey after losing his mom. I am a fairly new fan, having learned of him from a previous guest who said he is among one of the runners they would want to run with if they could run with anyone. I only had to see a handful of his videos before I realized, oh my God, I have got to be friends with this man. Or at least make the first move by interviewing him for the show. Luckily, none of my guests have learned yet that the podcast is really just my bait for making new running friends. Hey, Jeffrey, how are you?
Hey, new bestie.
Oh, perfect. I want to find out who you are in your own words, because like I said, I'm a new fan. I know who you are from your Instagram and your movie, which I watched. I know everything there is to know, except what is your sign?
I'm Leo.
What?
Yeah.
You know why I'm surprised? Because in my Googling, okay, apparently there's more than one Jeffrey Binney. There's multiple.
Well, there is a physicist in the UK.
Yes.
Yes, and he's not interested in chatting with me. I have hit him up out of the blue twice and been like, hey, I don't know, you know, who you are, but we have the same name. I thought I'd say hi. Crickets. he's not interested.
Okay, so one, the physicist is an Aries, and his birthday is the day after mine. So I got really excited, but I'm like, I don't think this Jeffrey Binney is a physicist. I might be wrong, but I don't think so. And then there's another Jeffrey Binney who I think is super old and used to be on like Star Trek or something.
Oh yeah. He was an actor, but from like not the 50s, if it was Star Trek. I'm Googling him right
now. Yeah. Google. Cause I was going to Google it and I was like, and his birthday is also in April. And I'm like, what are the chances that all the Jeff Binneys are Aries? Because I'm an Aries. And I was like, but then you're not. So that's why I was a little surprised.
So here's something interesting. The actors unions, I'm sure for reasons, will only allow one person to join the union with a name. So if you have the exact same name, you have to make a change. Sometimes people like choose stage names, and like one of my friends like had to do it and just went with a totally different name that like just thought fit their like, you know, entertainer persona. So I had, that's why I use pretentiously all three of my names, Jeffrey, James, Binney, usually when I introduce myself, because when I joined all the actors unions, that's the name that I had to like go by professionally. So anyway, random fact that you didn't ask for.
No, that's okay. I'm not as successful as you in the acting, or I mean, you are a model also, which we'll talk about. I didn't even put that on my little script, but I was like, it is an end note. And when I find out that, because I always think like it's such an odd thing, the acting world, and oh, that so like it's so weird. And when I meet other people, I'm like, oh, like you're normal ish too. So I don't know, but there's a lot of not normal in there.
It's a weird thing to want to do for the rest of your life. It's a weird industry. It's a really weird industry. There's no work, like, there are no acting jobs, and there are literally millions of actors. I think it's so fascinating. Like, no other industry, like, nobody would become a physicist, for example, if there was like a 0.3% chance of you being employed. Like, who would do that? But acting, the entertainment industry, is this weird, I think it's fame, I guess, is probably what it is. But it's so weird. It is the weirdest industry on earth. I am convinced of it.
And I think, and I don't know if you're the same, I think the reason that I even wanted to do it in the first place is because I doing things that scare me is like a crazy thing that I just have to do. Like, I have to face my fears. So like getting up in front of people, and I mean, when you're auditioning, right? I mean, you're just putting yourself there to be judged is basically what you're doing. So I kind of did it to be like, well, I'm going to do, like, I'm always worried about what other people think. So let me put myself in a situation where I'm there to be judged by people who basically, you know, are probably going to pick every little thing about me apart. So that's why I did it. I think it's helped, you know, just kind of build that tough skin.
Oh, absolutely. You know, lots of actors like don't want to read reviews. They don't want to read, a lot of influencers don't want to read comments, YouTube comments. And I'm the opposite. Like, I want to read all of them. 99% of them, like, just don't faze me. Like, no matter how awful they are, like, don't care. There's occasionally one that'll just like push the right button that'll get me like a little worked up. But that's the life. I've spent my life multiple times per week as an actor and online, you know, daily, having people say awful things to me about me and my performance, my family, you know, who knows what. And there is like total desensitization that you like, or at least that I have reached, where like I just really don't care. Most of the time. I'm not gonna pretend like there aren't some that like that get me, but it is a nice side effect of this actor affliction.
How do you feel about your sign? Do you feel like you match it?
Yeah, super duper. Then it's not, I don't think most people, at least, no, I think even people, I was gonna say, I think most people who just know me online or know me from like acting wouldn't see me as a Leo. And then I was gonna say maybe my friends wouldn't see me as a Leo, but I think my close friends would. I'm very much a Leo. Like, I very much like to take care of things, and I have opinions, and I am very polite and judicious in how I share them. But yeah, I have lots of opinions, and I if you don't know how things should work, just ask me, because I
I have a lot of questions, I'm sure I'll come to you. What is your birth order? This is how I really get to know people. This is my deep dive. What's your birth order?
Yeah, I am the youngest by 8 years. And I am
Leo
very
and the youngest.
Leo, like the perfect storm. Well, youngest, but also with that many, I'm pretty interested in birth order as well. Also, because there's so many years between me and my sister, I also have ended up with a lot of like only child characteristics. Because in a lot of ways, she was more like a younger second mom to me than, you know, like a typical sibling, because we were so far apart and a gender difference and we weren't into the same thing. So we just, you know, we didn't really, we're super close, but just in a different, not in a typical like, you know, two years apart sibling kind of way. It's definitely a like parental like relationship in some ways. Youngest by 8 years.
Dang.
And I'm very much the only child.
Oh my God. You're painting this great picture. Like, I'm not surprised at all. This is so interesting.
We'll talk about it more, but my mom was diagnosed with heart failure when I was 11. And of course, I didn't realize it until I was an adult. But looking back, on top of being the youngest and the only boy, I also was like literally a miracle child. My family, they had met a little redheaded boy. I didn't find this out until like 12 years ago. My mom couldn't get pregnant. That's why my sister and I are so far apart. She had been trying and trying and trying. And the doctors had finally said, hey, you know, we're not sure why, but this is not going to happen for you. And this was like late 70s, early 80s. So, you know, in vitro wasn't what it is now. So they had like started the adoption process very early. Like it wasn't, you know, luckily the child didn't know that it was happening yet or anything when they found out they're pregnant with me. And so, yeah, so they ended up like being able to stop the adoption process because they had just like barely begun it. But if she had, you know, found out like 4 weeks later that she was pregnant with me, I would have an adopted redheaded brother.
Oh my gosh. Wait, yeah. Is your sister redheaded?
No, nobody in my family is. Like, nobody.
It's so anywhere. Wild.
I know. It's so weird. And our mailman has red hair. So that, like, old joke was, like, really applicable. But I look exactly like my dad. So, unfortunately, there's no doubt there.
There's nothing interesting to talk about there.
No, I wish.
Except your family told you something about you. What's the pig story? What is this pig story? Wait, they told you, yeah?
Yeah, when I was a little kid, my sister and my cousins, they whenever like someone would talk about babies, they would like tell me the story about, well, you know, that's how normal babies are born, but like, you know, you were different. And I was like, what? And they told me the story about how like I grew up on a pig farm. That's the first thing that we need to know.
Oh, sorry,
I grew up on a pig farm, and they used to tell me that there was a baby pig 1 year, and I mean, which is ridiculous as an adult to like think that I believe this story, because we had like 5,000 to 6,000 pigs at any given moment. They told me the story about 1 year there was a baby pig that was just like so cute. And they liked it so much, and it had so much personality that they had it turned into a little boy, and that's where I came from. Now, the joke, I've turned that into a joke. It's in the film, and it's probably not suitable for a podcast.
So we've got your sign, we've got your birth order, and I know where are you from? Oh, where was the farm?
Missouri.
Missouri? Do you not have an accent from that?
No, my parents paid a really decent amount of money for acting school to beat that accent out of me. I used to did, Nikki.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't realize it, but I was in high school. I was the choir director at a Methodist church in our hometown. And a few years ago, I found a tape recording we had recorded a rehearsal for a concert, and it was so interesting to hear my voice when I was 18 compared to now. I sounded like just the gayest little hillbilly you've ever met. No more, it's gone. No more. Luckily, but the y'alls I can't get rid of. It's just too. It's like, I don't know. It's buried too deep in me. So I say y'all all the time. That's when I can't seem to shake.
I like to throw on y'all every once in a while, even though it has no business in my accent. I just throw it in because my other intro is like, hey guys. And my kids are like, can you stop saying hey guys? And I'm like, hey y'all. It doesn't fit. It doesn't match. All right. And then, so let's go with what is your, like family story right now. You're married, right?
Yeah, just got married recently.
Yeah,
this last September. Yeah, which was a whole thing. He's from the Czech Republic, and immigration during COVID. You can imagine, I'm sure it was pretty rough. But finally got here. We finally got married. That was 9 months ago. Got a dog, a cat, and a new puppy. So we've got quite a little menagerie here.
Oh, wow. All right. So I can't ask you cat or dog because you're both.
I'm both. I'm
pretty
solidly both. Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes I play either or with guests, and that's like one of the first ones, cat or dog.
Pig too. I would really, really love. Pigs are so cool. They're so cool. I would love to have a pig, a pet pig, a miniature pig. But they're kind of a handful. They're not
are
really.
They?
Yeah, they can definitely be kept as pets for sure. But they're a lot. It's not quite like having a dog. Like they're really smart. I mean, like a lot of times you have to put like a lock on your fridge. They'll open the fridge and like get in the drawers and open packages of food. Like they're really smart, and they have absolutely insane senses of smell. Like they blow dogs out of the water, and they'll do anything they can to get to food. And they're also very emotional. Like if you scold them, they'll pout for a while, like they'll have their feelings hurt. They're really, really sweet. Yeah, they're really emotional and really sweet. But they're also really loud. Anytime they get like frustrated, they're gonna make that pig noise, and it is deafening. So yeah, it's a lot. Like, you know, it's not a pet that you just on a whim.
Face it, guys. Shaker bottles suck. Your protein shakes always come out clumpy and you look like an idiot using the thing. That's why I decided to ditch my shaker bottle for good and get myself a BlendJet 2 portable blender. It makes perfectly blended protein shakes in just 20 seconds. BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It's small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking the whole house up. It lasts for 15 plus blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go. With over 30 plus colors and patterns to choose from, there's a BlendJet 2 to complement just about any style. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. And be sure to use the promo code MRWH12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping.
All right. So tell us about how you got, you started running. Cause I think it's an important part of your story.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I was never athletic when I was a little kid. I always played sports because my parents forced us to be active, which I understand and appreciate. Of course, I didn't when I was a little kid, but I only did, involuntary sports. I was always super into dance, though, so that was something physical that I really enjoyed. And then I moved to New York. I was doing theater, still super indoor kid, just playing all those chubby best friend roles, living life. And I think I mentioned that my mom had been diagnosed with heart failure when she was 11. I didn't know this when I was a little kid, but I guess they had just probably given her, a few years to be with us. But she pulled out like 17 more, because it wasn't until I was 29, 30-ish, somewhere in there. She had a surgery that didn't go as planned, and some other things didn't go as planned. And it was just becoming, obvious that we were kind of probably coming to the close. So I left New York. I was living in New York at the time. Left New York, came back to Missouri to be with my family while she was sick. And she ended up passing away about a year and a half later. But while she was she spent the last 3 months of her life in the ICU. And I spent the last 3 months of her life living in the ICU waiting room. And they had all these what I thought were obscure magazine subscriptions in the hospital waiting room. One of them was Trail Runner magazine, and I picked it up the first time and laughed at it. I was like, that sounds awful. And I just kept picking it up. I was starting to go a little crazy in New York. I never considered myself an outdoorsy person, but I slowly in New York started to like miss being outside. I started to miss being physical, and I had started riding my bikes. I had gone camping, which was something I hadn't done since, you know, I had lived in Missouri. And so those seeds had been planted, and I just kept picking up that Trail Runner magazine. And on a particularly bad day at the hospital, we had just, you know, gotten bad news after bad news. I just went to a running store, bought a pair of running shoes, which I now know are the worst. I bought a pair of those Vibram neoprene, like five finger shoes, you know, which are amazing. I love them. I love wearing them. They're so comfortable. But they're not suitable for a February muddy Missouri trail. Someone literally made fun of me.
What? Were they in the magazine, or is that why you got them? Or like,
no, I just went to the running store and had no clue what I was buying. And I was just like, I want those in a 13. That's probably what I need. I didn't ask a single question. I didn't ask for advice because I felt so out of place. I mean, it was, you know, it was just like, that's not my environment. And I was like, I just want to get some shoes and get out of here. God forbid they made me like get on that treadmill or something. I mean, like at this point I had not run, like I was not a runner, but I was just, you know, in a fit of rage, grief, I don't know, whatever. And I went and found a trail.
You walked in like you wanted to seem like you knew what you were looking for.
Oh, I totally pretended like I knew what I was doing. Yeah, but that's kind of how I roll through life. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the secret is I rarely know what the freak I'm doing ever in any scenario. I just look like I do. Yeah. Yeah. Went for a run and like immediately fell in love with it. Like immediately, like that day, I just like ran my rage out. And, you know, I mean, first and foremost, that's what I took to. I was like, I just had 45 minutes where I didn't think about life. I didn't think about what's going on for 45 minutes. And that was the most mind-blowing thing, to think that there was something I could do that could like literally take me away from reality for a while that was healthy. But also just, it felt so free. Like I felt like a little kid, like running around, jumping over logs. And you know, one of the other like huge things for me was that there was nobody watching me. There was nobody watching my fat jiggle. There was nobody judging my inappropriate shoe choice. There was nobody timing me. There was nobody there with a stopwatch. Like it didn't matter. I could do whatever the flip I wanted and it didn't matter. I could run, I could walk, I could take a break. It didn't matter. And that was like mind blowing for me. It was not what running was to me prior to that. To me, running was like track and being as fast as you possibly could and being skinny and tall and, you know, being able to fly down the track, or the presidential physical fitness test that we had to do at the end of every school year and running the mile. You know, it was running to me was my PE coach standing on the side with a stopwatch, annoyed because I was being an a-hole and refusing to run or even try to run. You know, so that's what running was to me. And suddenly I like realized that there was this whole other world of running that I didn't know about that actually sounded like a lot of fun. And that was like, I don't know. That just wasn't Jeffrey. Jeffrey was not a runner in the biggest sense of the word. He was not an athlete. So it really came out of left field. And, you know, it was one of those things where I would tell my friends, I immediately signed up for a 20-mile trail run, foolishly. But that was like the first thing that I set my sights on. I don't know. It's how I do. It's
how you roll.
And I don't learn lessons. I keep doing it over and over again.
You don't do anything like halfway, right? I mean, it's just one extreme to the other. You just
If it's not extreme and pretty ridiculous, like, is it worth doing?
Yeah. What? Like, yes. Agreed.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how I got into running, and it just kept escalating from there.
So when you talking about trail running, one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking is, I think trail running is a lot about everybody just is trying to get from point A to point B, however they can do that. And it's very, it allows you to be your own problem solver and figure out for you what's the best way for you to get there. There's not necessarily a need to do it a certain way. And I think
Yeah, because there is no right way to do it. I mean, it's so dependent on your body and your nutritional needs. And, if you're fast enough, you have the option to like take a 30-minute nap if that's something that you need to do. It's so long. I mean, it's like 30 hours for a lot of people. That's a really long time to be moving. You have to eat, like you have to poop, you have to pee, like you it's not like, oh, let's just, we got 6 hours to get this race done. It's like, no, you're in it for like a day and a half on the trail moving. You get so tired and delirious at the end. So like controlling your own body and your brain and like thinking, it's just so many crazy things happen in your mind and your body when you reach that point when like any normal person would say, hey, it's time to stop. This hurts. I'm out of energy. I need to eat. Like it's the time to stop. When you don't stop and you just consciously say, all right, well, we're not going to stop. We're just going to figure out how to keep doing this. Just like the craziest, most weird, magical, fun, silly, sad. It's so much happens. And so I think for anybody who enjoys, I tend to kind of enjoy overstimulation. I love roller coasters. It's probably, I should actually ask. I wonder if it's something related to like the ADHD that I've got dealing with. But like on a roller coaster, I almost relax. Like I love it so much that I'm just like, oh, I love like just like my like something else being in charge of my body. I love to just relax and just like I love it. And I think it's the same thing. I think it's what drives a lot of people towards ultra running. I think if you have that person, it's not for everyone. It's
No.
definitely not for everyone. But if you're somebody who, finds some enjoyment in being temporarily uncomfortable, it might be for you.
All right. So with the trail running, we talked about it's a little bit different than the road running community, and I think it has a lot to do with having that autonomy to get from point A to point B, and really just figuring out and problem solving. And so I guess from there, like, what has that taught you about yourself now, and like what you value now versus before you started running? Do you have like different values or things that you value about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think before I started running, I probably would have valued most my probably my sense of humor. And now I don't really know what the word is for it, but now that I've 5, 6 years into running, I think the thing I value most is, I don't know what to call it, my grit, my toughness, my, I never knew, I mean, I grew up, I was a theater kid. I like doing shows in our bay window when I was 4. My cousins and my sister would dress me up in drag and send me downstairs to entertain my parents and their friends. I mean, like, it's just that's the narrative that I kind of ended up with. Was he's just like cute little gay ginger theater kid. He's pretty funny. Not athletic, but he's a good time and funny and quasi talented. And that was just like that's who I was. And I never considered myself an outdoors kid, or I wasn't that person. I wasn't outdoorsy even. Not only was I not athletic, I wasn't even outdoorsy. But it turns out that, I think back to when I was a little kid, and like even though I was putting on shows and like practicing color guard, like rifle and flag moves in the front yard and twirling a baton and doing all this stuff, I realized I was always doing it outside. Like I wasn't doing typical like Missouri farm boy outside stuff, but I was doing gay ginger theater kid outdoor stuff, I guess. I don't know. So I just, ultra running just made me realize like I'm kind of a badass, and nobody is more surprised than me. Like I had no clue. I had no clue that I was this person, that I enjoyed this, that I had it in me. Because especially with ultra running, like it's so much about the mental component, arguably like more so about the mental component, and just experiencing all the things that go on in your mind, even, just from like ups and downs of like, oh, I got this, this feels great, to, oh, I have to quit, there's no way I'm going to finish, to like weird stuff. I mean, like near hallucination type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, push yourself like that far into exhaustion and calorie deficit. Some weird stuff starts happening. And it's just, I never knew. I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know that I had it in me. I mean, my friends and I like to play this game where whenever we're with a large group of people, where we go through each person and we figure out what our post-apocalyptic role would be. Like if everything ended right now and we were in like Walking Dead times, like who are you? Like, what do you do, Nikki? Like, what are you in charge of?
Chaos and dude, I'm really good at like chaotic situations and thinking on my feet. So I guess just figuring it out as should happen and being calm. You know what it is? It's I'm being calm in like chaotic situations, bringing the energy like down.
Yeah. That's my thing. Well, we'll be a good match. I think like that's a similar thing that I'll be doing. So we'll be a good pair. I don't know about your husband, but my husband is the opposite. And it like, it ends up like frustrating me. Like in a crisis, I go into this hyper like, okay, this needs to happen. This needs to happen. We need to do this. That's how this is going to go. Like, I just like, I don't know what happens. My brain just like, suddenly the ADHD is gone and I'm suddenly the smart, focused, articulate, efficient man that I'm not in any other part of my life. But that's how I am in a crisis. And my husband just like implodes, like just like can't function. He like literally kind of freezes, and it pisses me off.
It's not a gurgling thing. It's like it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is so funny because in day to day life, my husband is the one who's like very scheduled, very organized, very like things are like, you know, I'm the one who's like my brain is scattered. But it does, it flips like that. In crisis, I immediately switch on. Like I think I need that, even like in terms of like getting stuff done, I need a deadline. I need something to put me into like high stress in order to really focus.
Same like creatively, creatives, there's so much talk about like, oh, like how to not procrastinate and how to all, you know, how to be more organized and how to not like miss deadlines and all this stuff. And I don't want that. Like, I mean, I don't like, there is certainly a way to push it too far, but I am my most creative. I am my most efficient with a really aggressive deadline that I'm super behind on. Yeah. And I know it's probably not healthy, but that's when like the magic happens for me. That's when like I'm productive. I have interesting ideas. So I don't know if procrastination is always a bad thing. Can we cut that out? I don't want to deal with the DMs from what I just said.
We can certainly cut out anything you want to cut out, but I agree with you. I am a notorious procrastinator. Like I said, I prepare for these shows and I'm always like, I want to give you guys like multiple days ahead of these outlines, but my brain literally does not function until it's like, it's time. It's like crunch time, and like if I don't get this out, like this isn't gonna happen. Like it's, and I'm the same way, like my creative stuff happens at the last minute. It's like I need that pressure to get things moving, and I don't know what it is, but I'm also the kind of person who like I like a lot of space in my day, so I like a lot of flexibility. I don't like harsh like deadline times to do things, and I always push things to the last minute. Like I always think I can get one more thing done before I step out the door, which is why I'm usually like right on time, because I'll be like, oh, I can put another load of laundry. I think I don't like to be like still.
Yeah,
is a thing.
You know that meme where somebody like uses their finger to like to tell someone to shh, but they like, you know, like goes up their nose. I feel like I do that to my husband metaphorically every morning, because I'm no joke, we wake up and he always launches into, awesome, so I think I'll make breakfast and then let's go to the gym and then we need to do this and this, and I'm just like, shh. No, we're not doing it that way. All those things might happen, but let's just roll with it and see how the day goes. Let's see where it takes us.
Oh my gosh, that is exactly the same way my husband and I are. And he's like a morning person. He gets up at 4:30 and like, don't even talk to me until I have my coffee. And he does, he launches into that stuff and my brain goes crazy. I get so like irritated. I'm like, I can't think about that right now. Like I can't like function. He usually comes home from work and like has all these things. So I'm like, you just got home from work. Don't you want to take like 5 seconds to like decompress, but it's like constant on and I cannot keep up. It's very, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, but it is needed. I do need it, but it's, the same. Yeah. That's so funny. Okay. Well, since we're talking about your husband and, you know, kind of your issues with him, what are his biggest issues about you and running? Does he have any specific, things that annoy him about you and running?
I don't think so. He's super supportive. I think if there's one thing, he's not like a long distance runner. That doesn't do it for him. He's one of those like fast types. He's like a fit little athletic one. So he likes to like run like fast. He likes to go for like a fast 2 mile run. So I think if anything, that probably frustrates him because a lot of times like he just wants to go for a quick run, which he can still totally do, but he'd rather run with me. And I'm like, I need to go do 10 miles. Like I'll be back. I'll meet you at the trailhead in a while. So I think that's one thing that's a bummer for him just because he likes running with me, but you know, he's not really into, we kind of have opposite running styles.
Will he go with you to your races?
Yeah, he's a great cheerleader. And he enjoys it. He doesn't get it, you know. I mean, same with like my sister has crewed for me a lot and she doesn't get it. Like she's super supportive and excited to be there and it's really fun for her. She very much has the same personality type, like a different variety of our personality type. She's very type A, but she's very like stimulus oriented. She was an undercover narcotics officer for a long time. Like she's like, oh, so cool. But we like, I love that we swapped like stereotypical gender roles. Like I went to New York to flit about on stage and she became this like badass, like undercover cop. Yeah.
She's like a narc. Right? She's a
totally. Narc. Yeah, totally. Oh, it's so fascinating too. I know that's not why we're here, but one of the most fascinating things about it was I just imagined that like, you know, undercover narcotics officer, they're like going in and like buying drugs or something, and then like the SWAT team bursts down the door and it's this huge thing and there's arrests and things. And it's not that at all. Like she would go buy from people, but then like any arrest or anything would happen like months, maybe even years later. So they would never know who it was. They would just know that somebody they sold to was, they might not even know that they were an undercover officer. They might have, like, if there's so much, like somebody will get caught and they'll like get a lower sentence or no sentence if they turn, you know, if they can give information that convicts like a, you know, a bigger, more important criminal. Anyway, it's so fascinating. It was so interesting. Not my world at all. I have no interest in that.
Dude, I don't know about you. I could not play that role. Like I'd be so like transparent. Like there's no way I could pose as like somebody that was like hard trying to buy drugs. They'd be like, nah.
Yeah, I know. Same here. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, why did I bring up my sister? I was getting ready to say something that was on.
You were talking about, I know, you were talking about she goes and crews for you on your races and does, but she doesn't get it either. Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't get it, but she enjoys like the environment. Like she loves like having to stay up for 35 hours with me, and she loves like worrying about me and cooking me food and all that stuff. Like she really, I think, enjoys it. But yeah, so no, like super supportive, both of them.
Do you think that part, like, I don't know about you, but when I go into like a race weekend, literally it is all about me. Like, don't even tell, I'm not doing what, I'm not lifting a finger. Like, do you go into this super high maintenance, like, like all the attention is on me for this time. And like, I just kind of go into this super self-absorbed like place.
I go into the opposite place. I get so worried about, you know, like, are you sure you have time to come do this? Are you sure it's okay that you're away from work? I like am worried about, I like over worry about them. Like, I think in my film, even I walk into an aid station at like mile 82 or something. I'm barely walking, and I think the first words out of my mouth were like, "Have y'all eaten?" or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of go the opposite way. I just, because I have had to ask family and friends to just give so much time and money to travel and do this for me. And so I always just feel, I probably wouldn't feel guilty with my husband, but everybody else, I feel like a little guilty. you know, asking them to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm usually the opposite.
Okay. See, but see, I'm a road runner. And so that's how we are. That's a, you know, that's our vibe. Just kind of like that. No, I mean, I talked to a lot of trail runners because I feel like trail running is almost, I don't know if it's more transformative, but it seems to have a different kind of effect on people and the community. The trail running community does seem to be, and I like I said, I'm in the road running community. I think that we are accepting, but I think that it's more intimidating than trail running for some reason. And I think we need to fix that, which is part of the reason that I want to do the show, to not make it so much about, you know, performance and PRs, because that's even hard for like me to go into a race and make it about that. That's like a lot of stress. It's not, it takes the fun out of it. Which yeah. So anyway, that's kind of, I want the road running community to feel more inclusive. But I just think that there is just this difference that, is going to be hard to overcome. And I don't know how we do that, but,
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think like, you know, there's a community for every personality type, and it's, I don't know why I'm talking about it like they're these two super separate worlds and that we're not all mostly like involved in both of them. I mean, I talk about trail runners, like if you're a quote unquote trail runner, you don't step foot on a road. I mean, you know, I do road races. It's just, you know, if I had to like say like, oh, like which world do you identify with more? You know, I would say I'm a trail runner, but I love like the sense of adventure, the sense of like traveling also, which I realize on a road you're traveling, but I am just more stimulated by traveling like through a mountain range or something like that. I mean, seeing a new city by running on the roads on the sidewalks is such an amazing, especially like in New York, it's such a good way. I mean, you have to stop every block, so it's not great training, but it's a really fun way to like see a lot of the city. Same like cycling, I think it's such a good way to see a new city. But in general, I really like the sense of like traveling through like space, natural space. That's a weird thing to say, but I know what I mean. I get it. And I think like the sense of adventure too, like it's controlled. I mean, there's only so many things that can happen, but you might have to jump over a snake. You might run into some other interesting animals. You might fall. You might have to climb over a dead tree. You might have to, you know, there's just like, you do know what you're going to run into. I mean, you're probably not going to like, I don't know, like bump into some like epic like natural disaster or something, but a lot of things, there's a lot of variables that could go different ways, and I like that component. I really love fast packing, which I fast packing is like backpacking and trail running like married together, so you're carrying the most minimal. It's also kind of that like douchey hyper ultralight backpacker world. But I mean, like not taking a tent, I have a tarp and a bivy and enough food for like two meals and like almost nothing else. I mean, literally just the stuff that I need to just stop, sleep and eat. And it's so fun because you can like, you run and then when you're done running, you just stop, find a rock, go to sleep, wake up and do it again. And it's not, you know, you're not carrying all that, you know, no matter what backpack you buy, you're gonna fill it whether you need it or not. So it's nice to have that. It's almost freeing to be like, I only have these things. I don't have all my camera gear. I don't have extra snacks. I don't have, you know, my extra pillow. I have literally what I need to be able to sleep for a while so that I can keep running in the morning. And that's super fun to me.
Okay. So you talk a lot about your childhood, and a lot in the movie you talk about, like, I mean, so many times you're like, I was not athletic as a kid. I was not athletic. And it's said multiple times. And I'm like, I wonder why it's so important for you to mention that. And I mean, I'll ask you, do you realize that about the film, or do you know why it was so important for you to say that so often, that you were not athletic?
Yeah, because I think, I don't know what's missing in my brain that allowed me to say or think, okay, I'm 35, I'm 6'2", 350 pounds, but I bet that I can run a 100-mile ultramarathon. I don't know what's missing in my brain that lets me think those things are true, but I'm glad it's missing because it turns out they are true. And I think if there's anything that I leave people with, it's that like you can like without question do way, way more than you think you can. You know, you may have spent your whole childhood on a pig farm in Missouri thinking you're an indoor kid. And hey, you might not be. Like you might have some 100-milers in you. So I think that's always top of mind when I'm talking about this type of stuff, because I just really can't articulate how mind-blowing this would be to like 10-year-old Jeffrey. Like I would give anything to go back and be like, hey dude, get this. You are not gonna believe this.
Yes.
So yeah, I think it's just, you know, I would never, as like crazy and like uncontrolled and chaotic as my brain is, even me would never have dreamed in a million years that I would be doing what I'm doing now. But at the same time, it makes all the sense in the world, you know. It's I was physically active as a kid. I just didn't enjoy organized sports because I wasn't good at them. I love dancing. I took dance classes when I was 5 and then quit for a while and started again when I was older. And so it just, you know, on paper, it's so silly. People are like, oh, what do you do? And I have a day job, but it's fun to say, well, I dance. I make videos of me dancing on trails for TikTok. That's what I do.
Is that your line?
Yeah, I mean, because it is. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's new. It's just in the last year. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's how I'm paying my bills. And that's so silly. It's so silly. But it also makes tons of sense. You know, it kind of is so many components from my life. They're like, okay, that's really weird. But it actually makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think one of the reasons that running and is so transformative is because we get stuck in these identities. You know, for you, maybe it was being non-athletic and, you know, dancing around or being in theater or whatever. And that's kind of feels so far away from trail running and getting gritty and dirty. And so opening up that possibility almost opens up everything else, because it's so opposite of where you had seen yourself as, you know, 10-year-old Jeffrey or whatever. And I mean, for me, and I don't know if it's the same for you, but sometimes doing stuff like that is almost like a screw you to, you know, the people, the self that says like, you can't do this, you know?
Oh, 100%. And not so much to myself. I have this like blind optimism of a white man who feels like he can just do everything. It's other people. That's where I get my satisfaction from. There's nothing I love more than like proving people wrong when it comes to me and my my capabilities. And my whole life I have, you know, it's probably to a fault, but I have always chosen like whatever option shouldn't happen, which you would never notice this watching the movie, but like whenever we had like creative decisions that we weren't really sure of, there was one like idea that I kind of used to guide a lot of those decisions, which was things where they don't belong, because I don't belong here. I don't belong at this race. I don't belong in this documentary. I arguably don't belong on stage for, you know, filming this special. And so that's, you know, even like our interviews, and you can't even see it in most of the interviews, but I insisted that we have a like wooden legged upholstered chair, like for all of the interviews, which were done in nature. So, oh, we have this poor photo of one of my producers with this like upholstered, like antique chair hauling it up a mountain, because I insisted, that like that be the seating, because, you know, that idea of like things where they don't belong. But yeah, I think that's something that like, I love like doing things that I shouldn't be able to do.
That's a really good point. I never thought of it that way. I think I can really relate to that though, but I've never articulated it like that. I think I've always been wanting to be different. Like, in, so as soon as I'm doing something and then it catches on, I'm like, I need to switch it up and do something different, and just to like stand out, like a little bit, but I love the way that you articulated it there, because I think that makes a
sometimes
lot of sense.
Sometimes it's not a good thing to me though. Too. Like, it's happened on TikTok. Like, I have had people be like, oh, like, why didn't you do the Lizzo dance trend? And I'm like, well, because I didn't do it in the first 3 days, and like immediately my For You page was just filled with it. And like, everybody's already done it. So unless I have
been there, done that, yeah.
Hyper unique take on it, like, what's the point?
I forget what we were saying. So about standing out and stuff like, oh, so anyway, you were talking about what 10-year-old, can you hear me? Mm-hmm. You get, okay, 10-year-old Jeffrey would think about what you're doing now, which he would be like totally shocked. But what if you went back to like a high school reunion or something like that? Like, have you ever run into people that knew you, you know, from your childhood, and like they see what you're doing now? Are they just like so surprised?
I think they were surprised when I started running. Yeah, that was that was surprising and weird to everyone for sure. I think like the social media stuff now like makes perfect sense.
Makes sense.
I
mean,
like, and it's also kind of like, oh, sorry. it's also 10-year-old Jeffrey's like dream job. Not necessarily, it wasn't his like running component wasn't his dream job, but like the fact that like some of my days consist of me like waking up, learning some choreography in my office, and then driving out to some ridiculously gorgeous place, filming me, you know, doing a silly dance or something else creative that I've like created, or created my interpretation of a trend or something, film that, come home, edit it, and then share it with, you know, 200,000 people who are excited to see it. Like, what a dream. Like, like a literal dream. Like, it, that's one thing that he would have been like, oh, that's awesome. 10-year-old Jeffrey would have been so jazzed. He might be pretty skeptical of the running component, but that is 10-year-old Jeffrey's like dream job. So I consider myself infinitely lucky.
Yeah. So tell us your most viral video. Like, what was your most popular video?
For sure, the Dirty Dancing video. There's this trail that I, have you seen that one? There's this trail that I run on, and there's this bridge that really doesn't even look that much like the bridge from Dirty Dancing. The scene where she's trying to learn the choreography and she gets frustrated dancing on the bridge and kicks it. But every time I would run over it, like, I would think about like that scene. And so that was one of the first dance reels. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna like just take my camera with me and let's like try to recreate it. And it was snowy and I had like ice cleats on, I had my spikes on, so it was like, it was so impossible, it was so silly, and I was so hot, but it was so cold, and it was like a whole thing. And I was like, that was so stupid, like, whatever, let's edit this and throw it up. And I think it's at like 8.9 million views between the two platforms. So hands down, that was my most.
When did you get on Instagram? Like, when did you decide to be like, I'm gonna try? Was Instagram always your thing, or was it like,
this is so new. I've been on Instagram for, I don't know, like the beginning. I mean, I've been on Instagram for years. I would guess, I don't know how long Instagram has been around, but I'm pretty sure I've been on it for like 8-9 years, something like that. And yeah, I mean, I was an actor, I was a comedian, like I was putting lots of effort into social media. And I had followers, but I mean, like, just last December, so 8 months ago, 9 months ago, I had, I think like 7,000 Instagram followers, and my film had came out, and I still, you know, which I was really happy with. I was like, that's like incredible. And then that Dirty Dancing video, and then I like, it was doing well. So I was like, okay, I got to seize this moment. So I put I spent like a month, like I was so stressed, but I was like, I've got to get more of these made, because like, it's, you know, it's
traction.
All about momentum. Like,
yeah.
You know, like you need to keep like producing. So I really hit it hard for like a month. And I was at like 107,000, like 2 months later.
Wow.
And it's just, it's luck. It's luck. Yeah. I mean, it was an accident. It was accidentally a really good idea for a video. You know, now it makes sense like why it did well, but I wasn't thinking that when I thought of it. Wasn't like, I bet it's going to go viral because of, you know, sentimentality and like blah, blah, blah. And like my followers that, you know, this was, you know, I didn't think about all the reasons, and it now makes perfect sense why my audience base like was like in love with it, but it wasn't purposeful. I wish I could say it was, but it was an accident. I got lucky. I got really lucky. And luckily I had put all these, there's a Liza Minnelli quote that's talked about in like acting school and stuff a lot. It's something about how like success is when opportunity meets preparedness. So it's about like being ready when you get lucky. So, okay. And I think that's, I've been thinking about that a lot lately because I mean, I had spent 5 years working on my, I had done all of this stuff, this to create this, like this world that I wanted for myself, but I hadn't had the luck component yet.
Yeah.
And so luckily, like I got lucky with that video and I had the other infrastructure in place to be like, okay, cool. So I know that you just discovered me. I've actually been doing this for a while. I actually been working my ass off for about 9 years. But it finally paid off, but it doesn't for a lot of people. And I don't know, maybe I'll get jaded after I've been at it for a while longer, but I'll hear like influencer friends like talk about what they're doing. And maybe not like really appreciating how ridiculous it is or really how like infinitely lucky they are. Yeah, they're smart and they're creative and all of these other things, but there are like smart creative people are a dime a dozen. So yeah. Like, I it's the same with like traditional actors, you know, it's something rubs me the wrong way in an interview when an actor talks about their success and where they are and talks about it like, well, yeah, because I worked really hard and I was talented. And so obviously this is where I am. No, sorry. Every struggling, any former or current struggling actor out there, like that is going to like make them sick to their stomach. The number of friends I have who are infinitely more talented than most A-list actors in Hollywood is endless. And it's okay. It's just how the industry works. I mean, you know, it's like when they do a movie musical and there are millions of people who are more talented and more appropriate for a lot of the lead roles, but it's a business. And so we cast, I'm not going to throw out names, but we cast people who sell tickets and it's just what it is. But yeah. It's frustrating for me and I think other people when they don't acknowledge like the luck component to any success they've had.
Well, and it is a lot of being in the right place at the right time and meeting the right people. Absolutely. And you got to just, I mean, I think if you really want it, you got to keep putting yourself out there. And what I love about people like you is that you become successful by being yourself. And I think that's certainly a goal of mine. And I think it is probably a goal of everybody's to be able to be themselves and be successful at it.
Yeah, you know, and also it's the right thing at the right time. I mean, right now, there is a huge push towards body positivity, body inclusivity. There is a huge push towards having a more diverse, I mean, everything, but, you know, especially running community, you know, a more colorful community, gender, sexual orientation, variety in the running world. And I'm lucky that we're in a time when that's marketable for companies. 20 years ago, no running company would have had any use for me. That's not what people were talking about. It's not what people really wanted to hear. And so I also have benefited from being the right chubby gay ginger at the right time. You know, I mean, I've had a day job in the tech industry. And so, you know, there's a marketing component to it. I think a lot of influencers also forget that, like, you're a salesman. Like, you're a really unique salesman. Like, that's, you're a marketer. Like, that's your job, like it or not. You can find a, like, creative, authentic way to do it. But, you know, that's your job. And I'm trying to like embrace that in the right way. I always had that top of mind with acting school too, because the business component was totally disregarded. We learned how to just like act our little cojones off, but there was no like business component. And now, you know, I look at all the people that I went to school with and maybe 3 or 4% of us are like working in the arts as a performer. Everyone yeah. else is working in marketing, in tech, in costumes, in makeup. In like, there's so much more that they're small theater owners. I mean, two of my friends opened a regional theater, and I know that they got no business instruction from college, and it's not my school's fault. It's just how it is. But you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you want to make money being creative, you have to be a businessman or woman at least to like some degree. Begrudgingly. Yeah.
Okay, so you were talking about the are there things that you I guess feel more capable of doing now than like before you ran it? Like, do you approach situations differently now? Do you think that you've accomplished these like goals through running?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely chop things into much smaller, more digestible, like mini goals, I guess I might call them. Because, you know, like running 100 miler, for instance, is like borderline like inconceivable. Like, it's really hard to think about like how could that even happen? Like, no matter how confident or, you know, it's still crazy to think about like, how is that actually going to happen? And so chopping like my training goals into like, okay, well, let's not worry about 100 miles this week. Let's get to 5. That's the goal. Let's get 5 miles done. And you know, it's also, which I'm not a trainer, so I don't like to talk too much about specifics because I'm not a trainer, and there are lots of people irresponsibly giving advice they shouldn't give on the internet. So I try to not do that. But with most people who are training for like 100-mile ultra marathon or even a marathon, their first one would never, most marathon training plans do not include you running a marathon as part of your training for a marathon. I think most marathon training programs I've seen, you might get to 20 or 22, but the reasoning is that like when you breach a vague point in a run, the recovery time starts to negate the benefits of running that far. So, you know, like for ultra marathons, it's all about the back-to-back long runs. So you might do like 25 miles one day and then 25 miles the next day, but you would never do, like if you do 50, like you need to recover. You need like 5, 6, you know, you have to like properly recover, and that's wasted time. So it's more efficient to like do more, I mean, 20, 25 miles.
That's a big...
But, you know, in comparison to 100, so anyway, how did I end up talking about marathon training plans? What was your question?
So we were talking about how you approach things differently, goals differently, because of how you learn to accomplish ultra marathons, and you're right on point with it. I mean,
the short answer was splitting huge, huge goals into smaller, more digestible mini goals. That's the answer that took me 9 minutes to get.
Well, somebody said to me once, I think I was like, it was when I first started training for a marathon, I was like, I have to run 20 miles by myself. How am I going to do it? And they're like, it's such a weird analogy, but how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And I'm like, So I always think about that because it's just taking those little pieces and like taking your next step. And when I go out for a run, like even if it's just like a training run and it's a really hard workout, I don't think about, you know, mile 3 when I have my pace or whatever, my tempo pace, I think about the first 3 to get there. And I'm like, all you have to do is like 3 easy miles, do them, and then worry about your tempo mile. Like, I break things up so like tiny just so that I can make progress.
I always have to do that with the beginning of my runs because I think it's kind of normal. I don't think I'm alone, but for me, like the last few miles and the first few miles are always the worst for me. it takes me like a few miles to warm up. And I remember in high school, my best friend was super athletic and she used to talk about that. And she'd be like, oh yeah, I'm going for a 6 mile run. And I'd be like, that is absurd. Why don't you just go for like a 3 mile run? And she'd be like, well, I'm not even warmed up until I've like got 3 miles done. So like, what would be the point? And I wanted to like punch her in the face when she said that. That is the most annoying thing this chubby boy has ever heard me say. But it's true.
And I think that most people, most non-runners think that too. They're like, but the thing is, a lot of people give up because those first few miles are so hard. Yeah. When they don't realize that they would just keep going, it gets better.
Yeah.
Which is like a lot of things in life. You just keep going, you know, you get acclimated to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see, what else do I have here? Oh, is runner Jeffrey different than Jeffrey in real life? I don't know if you saw that question. Do you know what I mean by that?
I think, but tell me.
So like as a runner, I will use a porta potty. I don't care about mud, dirt, anything like that. In real life, I hate bugs. Don't, you know, I'm high maintenance. Don't go in a public restroom, that sort of thing.
Yeah. No. Okay. I am pretty overly chill about both. The only thing is like hygiene. So like pooping, I'm really weird about pooping. I've been weird. Well, I talk about it at length in my film. But I've been weird about pooping since I was a little kid. Like it's been like a thing. Like I've always been weird about it. So that's one thing that like, most people are shocked to hear. You know, I mean, considering how much time I spend out in the woods, I probably only pooped in the woods like maybe 6 or 7 times. Like there's enough Imodium AD out there to like make sure that doesn't happen. So like I am a total princess about pooping. I poop in the woods. I will poop in the woods again. But I mean, I go to great lengths to make sure that I've got my trowel. I have wet wipes. You know, here I am. Like I won't even bring like a toothbrush or anything when I'm fast packing, but I will bring my full on poop kit. I will bring a full container of wet wipes. I will. That is a non-negotiable for me. So. I guess it's half and half. Most ways I'm super chill and low maintenance, but that's one thing I'm pretty weird about.
I think that's fair. I mean, if you actually think about it, I mean, I think everybody should have a poop kit. I mean,
I think so too. I think butts are so gross. Have you seen that rant by that? I think he might be like, I don't know where he's from, but he goes on a rant about how like kind of gross it is that Americans don't use, or that a lot of Western cultures don't use like water or anything. Like after they go number two, that we just like take a wad of paper and smear it like up our crack and like pull up our pants. And we're like, yeah, we're good. Let's call it a day. He's like, that's actually like pretty gross. And I could not possibly agree with him more.
I'm a fan of baby wipes, like they're everywhere, all over our house. I'm a huge fan of that, but that's about as far as we go. But I think we're all pretty used to that here. I think that's fair. But it doesn't matter what, I can't believe we're talking about this right now. My husband would be appalled. He hates when I talk about pooping. He's like, that's so gross. You don't poop, I don't believe you. I would never just use toilet paper.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I'm also like that with other cleanliness stuff too. I think it might be like a weird holdover from the pig farm, because I was like, I'm like hygiene wise, like a really clean person. I like shower too much. I like to be clean. But I don't mind being dirty. But if I'm going to be dirty, I just want to embrace it. I want to just, yeah. And I think it might come from the pig farm, because like I was super clean, but when I had to help with the pigs, like all bets are off. Like you are going to be covered in pig manure. Like you are, and there's nothing you can do about it. So it almost becomes like a little fun to be like, all right, like, yes, this is what we're doing. I guess I've got pig shit on my arm. What are we going to do about that? And so I kind of have that same sense when I'm like out in the woods.
You know, but that's that all or nothing thing too. You're either completely filthy dirty or you're like sparkling clean. So yeah.
Yeah. But when I get to camp, like I have to wash my feet. I like wash my face. Like I definitely have to like clean up. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm weird about hygiene.
No,
you know what? It's okay though. Like I always talk about it. Like it's embarrassing. No, I don't know. I need to be proud that I'm a clean man.
There are worse things.
Yeah.
I respect that. I think that's respectable. I had a question that I totally lost, but I'm going to skip to this one because I have this one written down. What's the weirdest thing you've eaten during an ultra?
I mean, Fireball.
The shot? You've done a shot of Fireball?
Oh, yeah. That's like a thing in the like trail running world. Like the last like aid station or two, they almost always have a beer or something. Yeah.
I don't think I can drink Fireball because of like PTSD from like college. Do you have any drink? Are there any like drinks that are like that for you that you just cannot like that and Goldschlager? There's no way.
Mine are actually Goldfish. You know the crackers.
What?
I got like insanely like probably the worst flu I've ever had in my life right after I ate a like Sam's Club Costco size thing of Pepperidge Farm Goldfish, and I can eat them, but every time I eat them, I'm like, I don't know about this.
Oh, okay. A little cautious. Yeah. I know what I was going to ask you. How, living on a pig farm, did you become vegan?
I think the question actually is, considering me on a pig farm, how did it take so long for me to realize that I was not a meat eater? Because when I was a little kid, I loved helping my dad in the field. So it was, we primarily had pigs, but I mean, he also farmed like 3 or 4,000 acres of corn, soy, wheat, and Milo. Do you know what Milo is? It's like this red cereal grain. I think it's used in some liquors, maybe whiskey or something. I don't know. Anyway, he also raised some field crops, and I loved helping in the field. I loved that part of it. I loved like planting with him and riding in the combine, but I hated any time I had to help with the pigs. Like, and hated is kind of an understatement. We're talking about some Oscar award worthy fits I threw. Crying, screaming, pretending like I was asleep. I mean, I tried everything. I hated helping with the pigs. Hunting is, I know for people who didn't grow up in rural areas, that's kind of, that culture doesn't really make sense and is kind of weird, but hunting, I mean, I would say 80% of the meat that I ate before the age of 18 either came from our farm or from an animal that my dad had hunted. So it really is like a way of life. And I hated it. Like I refused to go with my dad. I never once ever went hunting with him. That is unthinkable for a son of a farmer in rural Missouri. I was obsessed with our farm cats when I was a little kid. I loved dogs. I've always loved animals. It's a short story is I did it on a dare. I had a friend who was vegetarian in college, and I didn't really have any opinions about it, but I loved to like push his buttons. So I would engage him in conversation because he knew that I grew up on a pig farm, and I'd get him all riled up. And one time he bet that I couldn't do the, PETA had this like 30-day challenge where they'd mail you materials on how to do it safely and why you should do it and recipes and all that stuff. I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, I'll do it. And I did it. And like immediately it like, I was like, this kind of makes sense. Like I suddenly like, this sounds a little over dramatic, but I realized that like, I did have like a low level guilt / uncomfortability with eating meat, but that's what I always did. I mean, it was like, I was so like desensitized to it and it was normal. And I immediately like noticed like that kind of like, I never noticed it was there, but I noticed it was gone when it was gone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it right. So I started doing more research, and the more research I did, the more I didn't want to eat meat. It was shockingly easy for me. I didn't miss meat. I missed crap like chicken nuggets and things like that. I didn't miss like quality meat, but at the same time, you know, all the information I was reading, I was like, okay, well, if I am going to eat meat, I'm going to go like buy a like, well, sustainably, responsibly grown steak, you know, and that doesn't sound good anymore. So it was like easier than I expected it to be. And that was 15 years ago, something like that. And I started as vegetarian and then I went vegan and now I'm like loosely calling myself plant-based. My husband is a total carnivore. He eats very healthy, so he's totally down for vegan stuff, but he's definitely a meat eater. But so like some dairy, I struggle with cheese. So
yeah.
Well, I call myself plant-based now. I mean, I would say I'm like 85-90% plant-based, but that cheese gets me. But you know, there's such a big difference too between I was about to say cheap food and expensive food. Well, responsibly grown food is not inherently expensive. It oftentimes is, unfortunately. But you know, there's a steak can be worlds apart. There can be a crappy steak grown on a mass farm with very poor nutrient input into the cow, and you know, like a really just shitty steak.
Right.
Or there can be a steak that, you know, I don't want any steak, but if you are going to have a steak, there's steaks that my family, my sister now, they have a pig farm, and they on a much smaller scale, but they sell all natural pork, farm-raised pork in our hometown. And I've like promoted them like a million times on, you know, Facebook and Instagram, and I'll have people be like, "You're vegan. That's so inappropriate." And I'm like, "You know what? No,
yeah.
I absolutely disagree. I absolutely disagree. I think it's ludicrous to think that there's a world where I'm going to turn everybody vegetarian or vegan. So if people are going to eat meat, why wouldn't I encourage them to eat quality meat from a place that I know where it came from? We know what went into it. We know how it was slaughtered. We know like what its conditions were. Like if you're going to eat meat, like, do it. Like,
yeah.
But there's good meat and there's bad meat.
Yeah.
Quite frank, you know?
Totally.
But that's the hard thing. I mean, you know, I'm sure it's not just our country, but you know, our food system is, and I get it, but a lot of times like the higher quality stuff is expensive. So it sucks that sustainable food isn't more accessible, but we can I guess solve that world problem on our next call.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I had a lot of fun talking to you. I hope that you do get on the East Coast at some point.
Yeah, where
let me know. Baltimore.
I have not committed yet, but I am strongly considering the JFK 50, which is outside of like west of DC.
Yeah, I know exactly where that is. Is that November or December?
November 19th, I think, something like that.
Yeah, well, let me know. Yeah, if you do that, that's definitely close enough. I've heard a lot of good things about it. It is a road ultra, though.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I think it's like 30 or 35 miles in the middle are like almost completely flat. So I've never done an ultra that's not like in the mountains.
Okay.
So that's very attractive to me because like as a bigger runner, the mountains are just tough with cutoff times. It's just hard to get this body up mountains quickly. I can get him there, but it just takes some time. Anyway, we were saying goodbye and here we are making fall plans.
I know, we can.
I'll be there eventually.
And I want you to make sure that you tell us about your Patagonia, right? You have this... are you doing something where you're inviting people to join you in Patagonia?
So I'm doing these like adventure trips that I'm leading. I am irrationally excited about it. Thanks for mentioning it. So we're doing one to Yellowstone in August, which was sold out, but someone had to cancel. So there's one spot available for that. And then there are a few spots available for Patagonia. Yeah, we're going to Patagonia in February. And it's a hiking trip. So not overnight. We stay in hotels every night, but there's two bigger hikes in the like 15, 16 mile range. And then a couple smaller hikes, like 5-6 miles. We're like going glacier walking. And I am just like irrationally excited. We fly into this like small airport in like southern Argentina, you know, to access Patagonia. And it's surprising to me, you know, we all know the brand Patagonia, but it's surprising how many people don't really know what Patagonia is. It's, I don't know if it's a, it's part in Chile, part in Argentina. It's a southern tip of South America. And it's like their Rockies, but it's like the Rocky Mountains on steroids. It's just so epic. And
have you been there before?
So remote. No, I've never been there. And it's also so remote. You know, it's not, it's not like, I don't know, you know, Denver is right next to like our like Colorado Rockies, but it's just, I've never been like that far out in the middle of nowhere before. And it's nice because it's guided. So we have like a whole tour company that's like, you know, taking us through everything. I would never, ever be confident enough to just like do that on my own. But yeah, it's like, it's through this tour company that handles everything. I'm just so excited. So yeah, there's one seat left for Yellowstone and I think four left for Patagonia. So it's the, check the link in my Instagram bio if you're interested, come join us.
And it's just Jeffrey Binney, right? Is that your
At Jeffrey Binney, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y-B-I-N-N-E-Y. Sorry, I'm sorry. I had COVID last week and I thought my voice was going to be okay, but it keeps fading the longer we go.
Oh my God, rest. It's that is not any fun at all. Well, thanks for putting up with the shaky audio stuff. I will email you and follow up. Thank you for your time. It was great to meet you and I really appreciate your flexibility today. So fun.
Okay, guys, now here are the updates. Sadly, Jeff and I didn't catch up this fall, and I don't see that he ran the JFK 50 miler, but this is what's so exciting about the timing of this release. Tomorrow is the first day of his sold-out Patagonia trip. You can follow along with him and his entourage now on Instagram at Jeffrey Binney. And by the way, if you're interested in other experiences with this badass ultra athlete, head over to his website and check out the Travel With Me link. There are a ton of epic adventures available to book now. Go to www.jjb.life and check it out. Thanks to Jeff for his time and best of luck on all of your upcoming endeavors. Thanks for listening to the Maybe Running Will Help podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can also subscribe now to hear exclusive content, uncut conversations, and commercial-free episodes released days after they're recorded. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at OneClassyMotherRunner, and to keep up with the show, follow Maybe Running Will Help. Thanks again, and I'll catch you next time. I hit record a drop, you can't ignore it. I'm transforming now these cars and planes, I'm always boarding. Just out touring down in Charlotte like I play for Hornets. When I'm performing, never boring, now you can't afford it. Champagne, Perrier, Finnish friends on my face. Looking like I'm from the D, D's no Cartiers. Pockets deep, 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 bro. I can make it in my seat, bro. Do you, I'm doing me, bro. Making noise, use a beat, bro. Thought I'd never make it like no way. I'm the real deal, no role play. My days off, that's no days. No, I hustle hard, young rose. EB the shooter, that's cold case. Those on the deals, that's rose. Got no pay, yo, no say. Okay, this the news, tell them read it. Been the one since the fetus. Don't sleep on me, Tempur-Pedic. That's a no, no, no. Spending dope for no reason. Got a ball head, Mr. Cleaner. Heard the big bags overseas, then we gon' go